the cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab some borax, and enjoy this episode of Crime Classics, entitled The Crime of Bathsheba Spooner.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland. Listen. The man in nondescript uniform dropping stones into that well is a mercenary soldier, more recently a deserter. He's testing the depth of the well, the only way he knows, since a length of rope is not immediately available, and more complicated machines are as yet undiscovered. This is the year 1778, and the deserter is named James Buchanan. Next to him is his friend, another deserter, whose name is William Brooks. These men are in the employ of Mrs. Bathsheba Spooner of Brookfield, Massachusetts, whose well it is. Mrs. Spooner will pay these men immediately they deposit the body of her murdered husband, right down there. And tonight, my report to you on the crime of Bathsheba Spooner, the first woman to be tried for murder in the United States.
Crime Classics, a new series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Thomas Highland.
The place is Brookfield, Massachusetts, the year 1778. Scene? The home of Joshua and Bathsheba Spooner, a large and respectable dwelling, two stories in height, situated on the north side of the road from Brookfield to Worcester. In the front of it, and nearly opposite on the south side of the road, are stately elms and a well. And in the living room, there's this.
What manner of woman are you, Bathsheba? There's no content in you and no happiness.
And what happiness have you given me? A life that dies quickly. Cooking and sewing. And from you, drunken sleep.
And you've not answered me. You would like to see me dead, would you not?
Listen to me, Joshua. When you returned this morning from Worcester, my heart sank in me. I'd hoped you wouldn't come back.
That I would have an accident. That in some way I would be killed.
Yes.
That you would be free then.
Yes.
To walk the town. Newly widowed with a wandering eye.
Yes.
And you listen, shrew. I am your husband, and I am your lover, and that's the way things are.
Old man! Old man! Ezra? Ezra?
I've been waiting. Bathsheba.
Wait.
No more waiting, Bathsheba. The time I was away from you, with your husband in Worcester. The thinking about you.
And there'll be more waiting. Until it's done. Until you kill him.
I tried, but I could not.
He asked me a question, my husband did. What manner of woman are you, he asked. Now I wonder. What manner of woman am I to love such as you, a youth? A boy who pretends to manhood. You, without the courage to...
The poison you gave me. There was no opportunity, Bathsheba.
And a boy who lies. Opportunity. When it becomes nighttime, my husband becomes a drunkard. You know that. To empty the poison in the cup when you were with him, a simple thing like that, you couldn't do.
I swear it to you, Bathsheba. He'll die.
When? Go to him now. To the tavern where he is. Empty the poison.
I threw the poison away.
With no courage.
Bathsheba.
Speak my name and bedevil yourself with it.
Just kiss me, Bathsheba.
No kisses. No secret whisperings. None of that. No more. Until my husband is dead. Laugh then. You'll see I mean it.
There's a wench, Bathsheba, at the other end of town. And she watches me when I walk by.
Then go to her.
All right.
Wait. Don't leave me.
You almost let me go.
Boy. Boy. You...
Bathsheba.
Kill him. Kill my husband.
Later.
And that was Bathsheba Spooner. You've come to know her pretty well. You've seen her hating, you've seen her loving. There's more you should know. She was the sixth child of an illustrious man, General Ruggles. The general was a man of great wealth and lived in a style of unusual luxury for that day. He kept 30 horses and had a park of 20 acres for deer and a pack of hounds for the amusement of numerous visitors. He was a man intensely loyal to the British crown and never hid his loyalties. And so, at the outbreak of the Revolutionary War, he was forced to give up his estate and to leave the country. His married life was also pretty bad, and he and his wife did not set a good example to his children in their conjugal relations. Bathsheba sprang from that kind of a household. Her loyalist background in time of war, and the very fact of the name she had, Bathsheba, were sufficient cause for the town in which she lived to view her with alarm. But keep this in mind. Bathsheba Spooner is going to murder her husband. How? Well, let's see how time and motive and circumstance conspire to get a man violently dead. The man, Joshua Spooner. Let's pick him up and see what he's doing. It's the same evening, and since it's after dark, he's drinking. And in Brookfield, there's only one public house in which to drink, Cooley's Tavern. And that's where he is.
Oh, no, 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 Doctor.
Then what would you do?
To trap General Burgoyne? Very simple. Hand me your tankard, Dr. King. Now, and here, this spoon, the line of march of Burgoyne.
Uh-huh.
And your tankard and mine, two sections of the troops of General Washington.
Uh-huh.
Now watch. And that's how we take care of General Burgoyne.
Yeah, yeah. Barkeep, more ale.
Joshua Spooner talks of strategies and drinks his ale. But mark this. Near the bar, another table. Two men. Men in nondescript uniforms. Deserters from the army of General Burgoyne. Their names? James Buchanan and William Brooks. They've made known the fact that they've deserted the enemy, so their drinks are on the house and the appreciative customers. They're having a fine time.
Drink your ale, Will. Make me a toast and I'll drink with you.
And a toast you shall get. Burgoyne is a scurvy...
Louder, Will, louder, else we'll pay for our own ale.
Aye. A toast! Aye, I'll give you a toast to that scurvy, plump-bellied Burgoyne. May he rot in the wilderness.
That is, if he don't drown coming across the St. Lawrence.
Gentlemen.
And a merry evening to you.
Joshua Spooner is my name, and it would do me proud if you would permit me...
Ale is what we're drinking, sir.
Ale for the patriots!
And patriots we are, indeed, to goodness.
Oh, yes. We joined General Washington, sir, and his colonials. You should know that. And from here, we go to Worcester, where a column of Washington's heart is a... Oh. Ale. To you, sir, and thanks to you.
My pleasure.
Willibach, your tankard is dry, and so is mine.
If you will permit me, gentlemen, it would be my pleasure. My pleasure indeed.
It would be Mr. Spooner's pleasure indeed to buy the lads more ale, as was the custom. True, it was 1778, but the etiquette was the same. Nothing too good for our boys. And the deserters in Cooley's bar were off to join our boys. As a matter of fact, it was Mr. Spooner's pleasure to direct James Buchanan and William Brooks to Worcester to become soldiers in Washington's army. It just happened that one of the landmarks that Mr. Spooner gave the lads went something like this.
Now, mark you, a file of elms and a well, and across the road from it, my house. When you pass there, you'll be leaving Brookfield. Then you will know you're on your way.
We'll have another ale before you leave.
You're a gentleman if I ever met one.
Oh, a true one, James, my lad. A real gent.
So they touched tankards, the deserters and Joshua Spooner, and they made tearful farewell. And the deserters left and walked the road toward where the elms were, and a house, and a well. Let's go on ahead of them. Let's get back to the lady. Bathsheba's home. Bathsheba's fixing her hair. And the youth Ezra? He's tying into it night ribbons. A lover's tender gesture. Their talk, however, is shocking.
Perhaps you're right. Perhaps the best way is not to poison him.
I say shoot him.
Perhaps, in such a way as to make it appear as an accident. Will you shoot him, Ezra? Tightly with the ribbon, dear. Ezra?
I have not the courage for it.
But you know of guns and shooting. You were in the army for a year.
I marched. I shot no one. I marched upon an ambush and was wounded. Myself, I never pulled a trigger.
If not you to kill him, Ezra, then someone.
Yes. Turn from your mirror, Bathsheba, and look at me.
Oh, listen. Do you hear?
Yes. Drunkards.
Someone. Go to the window.
Drunkards. Two of them by the moon. British deserters. I've seen them in town.
Call to them.
Bathsheba.
Call to them.
Hello! You there!
What do you want?
I'll talk to them.
A lady wants to talk to you.
A lady? At a lady's service any time.
Let them in, Ezra.
The Bathsheba Spooner who greeted the deserters must have been quite a sight. Tall, long hair, and blue ribbons. There must have been a fire in the fireplace, and in all probability she was standing in front of it. Her manner was gracious, and she was smiling. Ezra served the liquor. All in all, it was the nicest thing that could possibly have happened to two fellows who had deserted General Burgoyne.
And now, gentlemen, a question.
We bow. Bow, James, my lad. Say on, my lady.
How would you gentlemen like 500 pounds to see you on your long journey?
Mir Hanult would warm the cockles, wouldn't it, Will?
It would. Does that answer you, my lady?
And what would you do for it?
There is nothing that Will and I have not done, and for less handsome payment from less handsome women.
Far less.
Kill my husband.
This lad, the one you call Ezra.
Come here, lad. The next skinny ones don't take long for twisting.
Bathsheba!
Not him. Not Ezra.
Not him, James.
Then who?
My husband will return from his drinking. Will you wait for him? Kill him? When he returns, meet him outside at the door and greet him. Will you?
Not only for the money, dear lady, but for the pleasure of your presence to two tired soldiers. Right, Jane?
It's the truth.
You be the master of this house.
Huh? Yeah. And you are the two...
That we be.
This one was a struggler, eh, Will?
Get the woman. And the one she calls Ezra.
Aye.
Mrs. Spooner, come see. It is done.
And a tidy job, if I say so myself, Mrs. Spooner.
And now he's dead.
What will you do with him?
There's a well across the road.
Aye. Give us hand, James. And you, Ezra.
Yeah. I'll walk with you.
It's a deep well.
Poor little man.
And that's how Joshua Spooner died. And that's how Bathsheba Spooner killed him. You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Hyland. Later this evening, the Lux Summer Theater stars Fred McMurray in a full-hour adaptation of the romantic mystery comedy The Lady and the Tumblers. An odd triangle composed of a beautiful girl, a suitcase full of explosive letters, and a murdered man will make The Lady and the Tumblers' most unusual dramatic fare. Listen to it on most of these same stations later this evening when CBS Radio presents the Lux Summer Theater. And now, once again, Thomas Hyland and the second act of Crime Classics and his report to you on the crime of Bathsheba Spooner. Listen to this. It's awful and dread, this tale that I tell. Joshua Spooner lies dead in a well in Brookfield Town in 78, from 6 stout whacks across the pate. Small poem by an anonymous contributor to the Worcester Spy, the local newspaper of the day. A change of scene now. Across the road from a cold well into a warm living room. Tableau, four people.
Mr. Spooner was such an elegant man. What will become of his clothes in his closet and his horse?
You may have them.
Come away from the window, Bathsheba. Here, to me, close.
The stars are dancing.
You're shivering. Are you cold?
No.
Will is very weary, Widow Spooner. We'll not go on to Worcester tonight.
Then wait till morning. You can make a place for yourselves in the barn.
But the money we'll have now. And the clothes and the horse.
Yes, all of it. Ezra.
Yes?
In the morning, you will go to Cooley's Tavern. Inquire of Joshua. Tell them he's not been home. Tell them I'm frantic for his welfare.
Yes.
Good night, gentlemen. A very good night.
Mr. Cooley.
Aye? Had Grogan a nippy morning, Mr. Ross?
I've been sent to inquire of Joshua Spooner.
Who sent you?
The wife of him, Bathsheba.
Did she now? And why?
Last night he did not return home, and Mrs. Spooner is frantic for his welfare.
Not home? Well, he's not here. Last night he sat right there, my lad, and discussed military strategies with the doctor. Then, to the best of my knowledge, he went home.
Dr. King. Doctor. Doctor, wake. Wake up. Please, Doctor, wake up. It's important.
What is it? What?
Where is Joshua Spooner?
Where is he?
Mr. Cooley says he sat with you last night.
Well, he did. Then left me.
He's not home.
What?
Mrs. Spooner sent me to fetch him. She's troubled that he's not returned.
But where else could he have gone if not to his wife?
We must find him, Doctor.
Yes, yes, by all means.
Ezra did that very well, with the precise shading of alarm in his voice, the concern. A man on an errand for a troubled lady. Everybody was impressed. Mr. Cooley closed his bar. Dr. King appealed to the neighborliness of the other customers, and everybody went looking for Joshua Spooner. Immediately, they called on Mrs. Spooner, whom they found in the greatest apparent distress. Upon an examination of the premises, in the neighborhood of the doorstep, they observed the tracks of several persons on the snow. And on further search, they found Mr. Spooner. You know where? In the well. So far, only horror and suspicions. But now, let's pick up Willie and James. They haven't left Brookfield. Stupid of them, isn't it? But then you've got to examine it from their point of view. Why become soldiers in Washington's army, especially in the winter, and suffer the privations of the military when they could be warm and rich as a civilian. So, imagine it. Two tatterdemalion deserters, suddenly elegant, in Mr. Spooner's clothes, which were somewhat tight-fitting. But elegance and tight-fitting are somehow akin. Now, there lived in Brookfield a certain wench whose name is lost in history. This much is known about her. She had an eye for tight elegance. This much is known about her, too, that she went riding with Willie and James on their newly acquired horse.
I'll help you down.
Now, James, now.
Give us a bus, dearie. That's a dearie.
Will?
Aye.
How is it we're riding Mr. Spooner's horse?
Why, dearie, we don't know a Mr. Spooner.
Aren't these Mr. Spooner's silver buckles?
No.
Aren't you wearing his clothes?
These are our clothes, dearie. Come, let's ride some more. It brings the pink to your pretty cheeks.
But the cat was out of the bag. The girl told her mother, and her mother her father. And it so happened that her father was at that moment on his way to look for the murderers of Joshua Spooner. So the father told some neighbors, and they located James and Willie, brought them all together. The two deserters, Ezra and Bathsheba. And this is what happened.
The jurors for the government and people of Massachusetts Bay in New England upon their oath present that William Brooks and James Buchanan and Ezra Ross in the county of Essex, not having God before their eyes, an assault did make upon Joshua Spooner, feloniously, willfully, and of their malice aforethought, on the first day of March last past, with force and arms also by striking, beating, and kicking aforesaid Joshua Spooner, so as to inflict several mortal bruises, of which Joshua Spooner died. And that Bathsheba Spooner, widow and late wife of Joshua Spooner, being seduced by the instigation of the devil, did incite, move, abet, counsel, and procure the murder of aforesaid Joshua Spooner. How do you plead?
Not guilty.
Not guilty?
Not guilty.
What statement have you, Bathsheba Spooner?
I am the wife of the deceased. If what you accuse me of be true, what end could the death of my husband serve? Were there any reasons, persuading, hopes, inviting, or advantages arising from the death of my husband? By depriving myself of husband, I would subject myself to the burdens of a widow. If I hated my husband, as such has been said, could I not have separated from him, gone to my father or to my brothers? What foolishness is this to say I've loved Ezra Ross, when one of my station might have any gallant I please? Gentlemen, if I be guilty, I was not of sound mind.
The sheriff of our county of Essex, greetings. We command you that on Thursday, the 4th day of June next, between the hours of 12 and 4 of the clock in the afternoon, you cause William Brooks, James Buchanan, Ezra Ross, and Bathsheba Spooner to be conveyed from our jail, where they are now in your custody, to the usual place of execution, and there to be hanged by the neck until their bodies be dead.
The motive, the crime, and the sentence. Justice was simple. And quickly, too quickly for the four prisoners, the 4th day of June. This is a copy of the Worcester Spy dated that day that I have here. I'd like to read from it. It was about 2:30 of the clock in the afternoon when the four criminals were brought out of prison and conducted to the place of execution under a guard of 100 men. The three men went on foot. Mrs. Spooner was carried in a chaise, being then, as she had been for several days, exceedingly feeble. The procession was regular and solemn. Just before they reached the place of execution, one of the most terrific thunderstorms that had occurred within the memory of the oldest inhabitant darkened the heavens. There followed an awful time. The loud shouts of the officers amidst the crowd of 5,000 people, the horses pressing upon those in front, the shrieks of the women in the tumult and confusion, the malefactors slowly advancing to the fatal tree, preceded by the dismal coffins, the fierce coruscations of the lightning athwart the darkened horizon, quickly followed by loud peals of thunder, conspired together and produced a dreadful scene of horror. It seemed as if the author of nature had added such terrors to the punishment of the criminals as might soften the stoutest heart of the most obdurate and abandoned. At length, the place of execution having been reached, Ross, Buchanan, and Brooks ascended the ladder to the stage.
Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Ross made an audible prayer. The other two were engaged in silent devotions until they faced the noose. Mrs. Spooner, as she approached the tree, was seen to bow gracefully to many of the spectators with whom she had been acquainted. Then she crept up the ladder on her hands and knees. When the eyes of the malefactors were covered and all was ready, Mrs. Spooner took the sheriff by the hand. And for the first time, Bathsheba Spooner accepted the verdict of justice.
My dear sir, I am ready. In a little time, I expect to be in bliss. And but a few years must elapse when I hope I shall see you and my other friends again.
That's the way the newspaper recorded it. This has been my report of the crime of Bathsheba Spooner, the first woman tried and executed for murder in the United States. In just a moment, Thomas Hyland will tell you about next week's Crime Classic. The National Blood Program has been made part of the Department of Defense. That's how vital a continuing growing stockpile is against emergencies of war or peace. In the warm weather months, donations fall off. In the first week of June alone, donations drop 20%. This must be offset immediately. Before you go away, please phone the Red Cross for an appointment to give a pint of blood. You'll enjoy your vacation more for having done it. And here again is Thomas Hyland.
Next week, we'll be with you at the same time, although geography and year will change. The place? Pimlico, England. The year, 1879. My report? On the shockingly peaceful passing of Thomas Edwin Bartlett, greengrocer. Thank you. Good night.
Bathsheba Spooner, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Hyland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. Bathsheba Spooner was played by Mary Jane Croft. The cast included Herb Butterfield, Sam Edwards, William Johnstone, Georgia Ellis, Tudor Owen, and Ben Wright. Bob Lamon speaking. Stay tuned now for Gary Moore with Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. And remember, for mystery mixed with merriment, join Mr. and Mrs. North Tuesday evenings on the CBS Radio Network.
Welcome back to Ricky Jin's all-time radio. Get your hands out of your pants, Shabby. Now enjoy this filthy episode of The Weird Circle, entitled The Telltale Heart.
Weird circle. In this cave by the restless sea, we are met to call from out of the past stories, strange and weird. Bellkeeper, toll the bell so that all may know we are gathered again in the Weird Circle.
Is quiet, deathly quiet. My uncle and I have just finished our meager repast in the dining room. Listen. Yes, that's my uncle walking up and down overhead, pacing the floor. He senses it too, my nervousness. Every night after dinner, he leaves the dining room and goes upstairs to the second floor, where he paces up and down. And suddenly, his heart begins to beat louder and louder. You can't hear it, but I can. My nervousness has sharpened my senses. Yes, I can hear things no one else can hear. Confound my senses. The footsteps. They've stopped. Now he'll walk down the circular stairway and join me here in the parlor. And I'll have to look at him, watch him. That eye. I have nothing against him, but his eye, that huge, distorted eye.
If the eye offends thee, pluck it out.
Pluck it out.
Tortures me at night. I lie in bed and shut my eyes, but that horrible thing peers at me. Embedded in my senses, that eye glistens and shimmers. It haunts me.
Kill.
Yeah.
Kill. I've nothing against him. My uncle, my only relative.
The eye.
Pluck out the eye.
The eye. The eye. He's coming, yes, now down the stairs, sniffing as he blinks. The swollen lid covers that eye. Uncle, is that you?
Is it me? Of course it is. Who else would it be, Charles?
I don't know.
Now for a nice hour of relaxation. Will you join me in a cigar, Charles? Here, take this one of mine.
Thank you, Uncle.
Sit down here.
I'd prefer sitting back here, Uncle.
Oh, nonsense. I can't see you over there, and you can't see me. Come. Come sit over here.
I'd much prefer to stay here.
Do you dislike my company after all these years, Charles?
No, Uncle. All right. I'll join you.
But...
why are you staring at me like that?
The eye.
Look at the eye.
Staring at you.
Red and swollen, hideous.
A pale blue film covers it.
Kill.
Charles?
Yes, Uncle?
Come, light up your cigar. Here's a light. Now, that's better, my boy. These cigars have rich, fragrant aroma. A very rich, fragrant aroma. It lulls a man's nerves into a peaceful state. Leaves the mind free for contemplation, doesn't it?
Kill.
Yes, Uncle.
Kill.
Nothing like the hours spent meditatively. Oh, blasted visitors. You answered the bell, Charles.
Yes, Uncle.
I dislike being interrupted like this. It's bad for my digestion. People should know that.
Good evening, Mr. Holscombe.
Well, good evening, Charles. I hope you and your uncle don't mind a nice neighborly visit.
I'm sure we don't, Mr. Holscombe.
I'm glad. I was all alone this evening and felt the need of a nice, friendly chat, so I dropped over. Good evening, Mr. Woodward.
Good evening, Mr. Holscombe. How are you this evening?
Feeling surprisingly fit. Man of my age has no right feeling so healthy. Bad for the doctor's income, but I feel like a man of 20. Just as fit physically and mentally as Charles here.
Thank you, Mr. Holscombe.
Won't you join us for a little while, Mr. Holscombe?
I'd love to. Yes, indeed. I'd enjoy it.
Can't be for long. I'm retiring early, but a short visit would be appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Woodward. Mind if I light up my pipe?
No, not at all, Mr. Holscombe. Charles, get him an ashtray before he scatters the ashes all over the carpet. You know?
Yes, Uncle. Here you are, Mr. Holscombe.
Thank you, Charles. Well, 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 what's this?
Well, as any idiot can plainly see, it's a knife.
Yes, a knife, Mr. Woodward. It's a strange-looking knife.
Belonged to our ancestors. Charles, what's it doing down here off the hook on the wall?
I took it down from the wall to clean it, Uncle.
Clean it? Well, old knives are supposed to look old.
Clean it.
Clean it?
I'll put it back.
Be careful, Charles, my boy. I knew a young man exactly your age who took a family heirloom down from the wall one night and blasted if it didn't slip and cut off his right arm. Yes, took the arm clean off right to the elbow. He was a mechanic by profession, and it ruined his career.
Be careful, Charles, in putting the knife back. You'd better stand on a chair, Charles. It's much wiser to take an ounce of prevention.
Yes, your uncle's right.
How's that, Uncle?
Well, it's not hanging straight. I like things to hang straight. It annoys me to have something crooked on the wall.
Yes, it means a death in the family. One of the pictures in my house was crooked on the wall the night of my wife's death. Now, I'm not a superstitious man, mind you, but I...
That does it, Charles.
All right.
Now, put the chair back where you got it.
I'm not a superstitious man, mind you, but I was confounded when she died. Confounded, I tell you.
Yes, I imagine that you were confounded.
Of course, that coincidence really doesn't compare with an event which occurred to a friend of mine. His name was, very common name. What was it? Smith. Peter Smith.
Now, what about Peter Smith?
He had a picture on the wall in his home. Well, this picture sidled over on its wire, refusing to stay upright.
The picture refused?
I swear it's true, Mr. Woodward. Well, I was there, if you don't believe me. Do you know what happened?
No, I do not know what happened.
Peter Smith died that very night.
All right. What time is it, Charles?
Almost 9 o'clock, Uncle.
Three more hours.
If thine eye offends thee, pluck it out.
It's 9 o'clock. It's almost my bedtime, Mr. Holscombe.
Oh, don't mind me, Mr. Woodward. I was about to leave anyway. I see. Look at the knife hanging on the wall. It slipped sideways again.
So it has.
Anxious? Anxious, Charles?
The knife is anxious.
Reminds me of Peter Smith's picture. Well, I must be on my way. Don't bother to see me to the door, Charles. I'll find my way out. Good evening, Mr. Woodward.
Good evening, Mr. Holscombe. Come. Confound it, Anna. That man makes me nervous, Charles, with his stupid stories of Smith. Fix that knife, Charles.
Of course, Uncle. I'll fix it right away.
I'm tired. I'll go on up to bed now.
I'll help you up the stairs, Uncle.
Help me? Since when do I need help? Well, maybe I do, Dad.
Anything else you want of me besides opening this window, Uncle?
No, nothing, Charles.
I'd better take this chair out of your way.
Oh, the chair isn't in my way.
In case you should awake during the night and want to get out of bed. You don't want to stumble over chairs on your way to the door.
Well, I never awake during the night, Charles.
But you might.
Or we might. Yes, we might. We might creep in here.
I might, yes, I might. Oh, I might do anything, my boy. I also might not. Now take the candle with you before you leave, Charles.
Of course, Uncle. I hadn't intended to leave it burning.
Of course. We'll take it with us.
Of course. Of course.
Good night.
Good night. 9:30. 9:30. I must be clever. I must think everything out very carefully.
Yes, carefully.
Must wait till midnight. Yes, till midnight. Why must I wait till midnight? Why?
That's the plan. The clever plan.
Clever, clever.
Walk down the stairs and wait in the parlor. The room will be dark. And I'll wait. I'll wait. He'll be asleep by midnight.
Clever, clever.
Then at midnight, I'll creep up the stairs with a knife. And if the eye offends me, pluck it out. It must have meant me. Of course, it's all so clear.
Clear, clear and clever.
First thing to do is get the knife. Go into the parlor. Stand on the chair and get the knife.
Be careful, Charles.
Careful, careful, careful with the chair. You pull up the chair and stand on it, but be careful.
I'm always careful. Now I've the knife. What do I do next? What is the plan?
Sit and wait. Sit and wait.
The doorbell. Who could it be at this hour? This isn't part of my plan. No, not part of my plan.
Get rid of them, whoever they are. Get rid of them.
Oh, Mr. Holscombe.
Sorry to disturb you, Charles, but I left my pipe here. I looked all over my house for the blasted thing before I remembered I'd left it here.
Well, it must be in the parlor.
Don't bother yourself. I'll get it.
It's no bother.
Why, you're trembling, Charlie. Did I frighten you when I rang the bell?
Well, I wasn't expecting you.
No, not expecting you.
Expecting you.
I read of a man in the paper who died of fright when his doorbell rang. It was just the other day I read it. Very amusing article, too. But, oh, here's the pipe. Imagine my leaving it behind.
Yes, imagine it.
Thanks again, Charlie. What's this knife doing down here again?
It slipped.
Slipped again, did it? Well, well, well. Just like the picture at Peter Smith's.
Let me know if anything happened.
Of course.
Of course.
Of course.
Good night, Charles.
Good night, Mr. Holscombe. Now, the plan. The plan to wait. Wait. Wait for midnight. For midnight. Yes, for midnight. Slowly. So very slowly.
Does Holscombe suspect Charles?
He knows that the knife had been moved.
Does he know it's in your hand now, Charles?
Snugly in your hand.
The plan calls for the knife to be in my hand.
Charles, your palms are moist.
May
Maybe the knife will slip, Charles.
It's almost midnight.
Yes, Charles. 15 seconds.
Maybe the knife will slip, Charles.
It can't slip. It belongs in my hand.
Where is the lantern, Charles?
You've got to see, you know.
I have it. It's ready.
Listen, Charles.
Listen.
Midnight. 12 midnight.
The time has come.
Yes, the time has come.
Now for the lantern. Light it. Light it. Shut the door of the lantern. No light can escape. None. None.
The lantern in one hand.
The knife in the other.
The knife.
The knife.
Listen. The house is so quiet. Yes, deathly quiet. I must walk quietly.
Listen.
Listen.
My senses sharpen. Every second makes them sharper. I can hear the rhythmic beating of the old man's heart. The beating of his heart.
Beating out his last breath.
His last breath.
His last breath. Do you know death is outside your door, Uncle? Death is waiting, Uncle, waiting. The door of your room opens gently, Uncle. Very gently, Uncle.
Careful, the plant.
Careful, careful.
Listen. Listen. The heart. The beating of the old man's heart.
Who's there?
Stand still, Charles.
Stand still and wait. Just wait. Wait until his gleaming eye is focused on your face.
Who's in my room? Who is it? Oh, where's my candle?
Don't answer, Charles. Don't answer.
Just wait. Wait.
Charles! Charles!
He's calling for you. Little does he know.
Charles!
Calling for you.
Calling for you.
Oh, someone's in my room. I can see the shadow across my bed. Who is it?
Let him guess and worry, worry.
Worry.
The room is hot, hot in heaven's name. Answer me.
Don't move a muscle. Just stand still and wait.
Wait, wait.
Oh, what is it? Who is it? Where is Charles?
Listen to his heart.
His heart. Listen to his heart.
Now it's panic. Later, it will be the forewarning of death.
Oh, somebody help me.
Now raise the lantern. Slowly, Charles.
That's it. That's it. Focus it where the eyes should be.
Then slowly open the door of the lantern and let the light shine in that eye.
Ah! If the eye offends thee, pluck it out.
The eye! No! No! Not the knife! Not the knife!
Listen to the heart beat its last beat.
He's dead. He's dead. And I'm free of that horror. Free of the eye. Of the scorpion eye.
The horrible scorpion eye.
Clever, clever, Charles. Burying the body where no one will ever suspect it to be.
Clever, clever.
Yes, I am clever.
Underneath the floor in the parlor.
Underneath the floor in the parlor.
Yes, right here beneath me. I must be careful. Very careful.
You are careful. Hammer the nails in straight.
The nails are important.
Very important.
One more nail and then my job is done. One. Two. Now. Now what? Oh, yes. Pull the big upholstered chair over the grave. There. And then place the carpet just as it was in front of it.
Clever, clever.
Yes, I am clever. Very clever. The plan has worked. He's dead. He's dead. And no one knows.
No one knows?
I've cleaned up his bedroom, scrubbed it, put his clothes away. Not even a bloodstain remains to give me away.
Not one?
Not one. No trace. No trace at all.
You're positive?
Of course I'm positive.
Clever, clever, Charles.
Of course I'm clever. Today I'll tell the neighbors my uncle left for the country.
Will they believe you?
Of course they'll believe me.
Believe you?
Believe you?
And tomorrow, early tomorrow morning, I'll say I'm leaving to join my uncle in the country. It's so easy. I'll disappear. Disappear completely from the world. Forever from that eye. That huge, distorted eye.
So I dropped over to this precinct station, Inspector Gelby, and thought I'd tell you about it.
Yes, a very strange story, Mr. Holscomb. You say this old man, Mr. Woodward, has never left town for the baths before?
Not for the last 20 years, sir. I've been their neighbor for longer than that, really.
And the nephew, Charles Woodward. How did he seem this morning?
Very much the same as usual. Perhaps a trifle more chipper. Said he was looking forward to joining his uncle at the baths tomorrow.
And you're positive this scream you heard last night came from the direction of the Woodward house?
Absolutely. I was standing at my window at the time, looking out. It must have been a little past midnight. Suddenly I saw a gleam of light from Mr. Woodward's bedroom and then the scream.
Scream last long?
No, but I am positive no unimportant explanation is behind the scream.
It sounds fishy enough, Mr. Holscomb. Certainly no harm in investigating it. The boy is innocent. He'll be glad enough to allow us to search his uncle's bedroom. If he's guilty, well, we'll know in good time. Yes, in very good time.
Mind if I go with you?
Not at all, not at all. Like to have you along, Holscomb. You're always welcome.
This isn't a case of idle curiosity, Inspector. It's just that I enjoy collecting these little tales of death and murder. I've made it a life hobby, and I hate to miss an opportunity. Yes, I hate to miss an opportunity.
Search the house, Inspector, if you don't believe me. My uncle's room is right at the top of these stairs.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
My uncle will be very amused by all this when I tell him.
Oh, it's not that either I nor Mr. Holscomb suspect anything, you know.
No, no, certainly not, Charlie, my boy.
Of course not. Yep, this is my uncle's room, as you no doubt know, Mr. Holscomb.
Yes, of course it is.
Search to your heart's content.
Room's in perfect order.
If I murdered my uncle mysteriously, there ought to be at least one blood stain on the bedclothes or on the floor.
Mind if I undo the bed to look at the sheets?
Well, not at all, Inspector.
Careful.
You are clever, clever, but be careful.
The bed sheets are used, but there's certainly no sign of violence here.
Well, naturally, Inspector.
And the floors. Spotless. Your uncle must be a very neat man.
Exceedingly neat. Isn't he, Mr. Holscomb?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, I'm sorry we bothered you like this, eh? But you know it's better to be on the safe side.
Well, I understand perfectly, Inspector.
I'm sorry, Charles.
Perfectly all right, Mr. Holscomb. I would have done the same thing in your shoes. Won't you gentlemen join me in the parlor for a cup of tea before you leave?
Well, now, we'd be too much trouble.
No trouble at all, I guarantee you. No trouble at all. Here, I better close the door to Uncle's room before dust blows through from the hallway. You know my uncle's fetish. Well, I'll join you gentlemen in the parlor shortly after I fetch the tea.
A very amusing story. A very amusing story, Mr. Holtz.
I always thought so, Inspector Gilby.
You collect stories of crime, don't you, Mr. Holtz?
Yes, indeed. I found some prize ones in my day.
Yes, I imagine you have.
He'd enjoy your story, Charles.
Yes, he'd enjoy it.
Enjoy it.
Pass the sugar, Inspector, please.
Huh? Oh, yes, here you are.
Listen, Charles.
What is it?
Listen. Listen.
What'd you say, Charles?
Nothing.
I've a very amusing story about a woman in India. I read it in the paper the other morning just as I was eating some very fine orange marmalade.
Listen, listen.
It's the heart, Charles. The old man's heart.
The heart? The heart? You can hear it.
No. No, it can't be.
What can't be? He denies the truth of my story even before I tell it.
What about the woman in India?
Can it be? Can it be the beating of the old man's heart?
Well, she murdered a rich uncle of hers.
Can a man I murder? Turned alive.
It's getting louder and louder.
Louder and louder.
Why did she murder him?
No known motive.
They're playing with me.
both watching me. Watching me.
Watching you. Watching you.
How did she murder him?
Cut him in little pieces and hid him under the flooring in her bedroom.
Under the flooring? Under the flooring.
Making a mockery of a living horror.
They know, Charles. They know.
They know, Charles. They know.
What's the matter, Charles?
You look ill.
Ill?
Ill.
Make it stop. Make it stop.
They're playing with you.
Playing with
no.
you?
No.
Watch him, Inspector. He's
fools. Don't play with me like this. You can hear it. I can see it in your faces. In your evil, grinning faces. You can hear it.
The heart. The telltale heart.
Return from death.
Admit you can hear it. It's becoming louder and louder. Louder and louder.
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 Stop it. Stop it. I admit the deed. I admit I murdered my uncle last night. Only for the love of God. Make his hideous heart stop beating.
You murdered?
Yes. Yes, I murdered him. Tear up the plank underneath his chair. Rescue the body. But stop the beating of the telltale heart.
Telltale heart.
Telltale heart.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought to you the story, The Telltale Heart. Bellkeeper, pull the bell.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have heard another immortal tale in The Weird Circle. Bellkeeper, toll the bell. Be here in this lonely cave by the restless sea once again next time for another immortal tale in The Weird Circle.
Listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAB.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.